Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We're back at it here in the courtroom of current events on Peter's Proffer, and staying in the holiday spirit, today's topic is on prison. We are going to talk about different kinds of prison facilities. We're going to talk about different classifications of prisoners. We're going to talk about how the system chooses what prison a prisoner goes into, how you can get transferred, how you can do visitation. We get a lot of questions on this. We get asked for a lot of help for people trying to contact family members or friends that are in prison, how they find out where they are, how they can visit them, what they have to do in order to get to visit them, and things like that. So it's an important topic, and a lot of people want and need to know about it. So we are going to have a bit of a downer episode, but it'll still be interesting and it'll still be an opportunity for us to learn more about something that we don't know. My dad and Pete are going to come on the show and they're going to explain a lot about that. We also have our giveaway for the East-West Shrine Game coming up. So if you're interested in going to the College All-Star Game that is held at Tropicana Field in St. Pete, let us know. Send me an email, petertragos@greeklaw.com, or let us know on Facebook at Tragos Law if you want to be entered in to win some tickets. But for now, let's learn a little bit more about our prison system. Okay, so today we're talking all things prison, and to start, we always like to distinguish on our criminal podcasts the difference between federal and state, because there are a ton of differences in the criminal system. So when we're talking about prisons at first, Dad, I want you to talk about the federal prison system and talk about the different types of prison.
Well, hold on a second. Before you get to prisons, let's distinguish for our listeners the difference between jail and prison.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Well, jails are housing facilities that are pretrial. In other words, places where people are being held in order to be sentenced or to have an adjudication one way or another of the merits of their case.
So you're waiting for your trial. You're waiting after you plea to hear how long you're going to go to prison for, things like that. You wait in jail. And it's usually known as the county jail.
Right. It's not known as the county prison for that reason.
Right.
Right. And then prison's actually where you're serving your time. And that's where you're classified based on a bunch of things that I'm sure we're going to talk about here in a second.
So the prison is after you get sentenced or after you plea, after your trial. That's where you're sent away to serve your actual sentence if it's more than 364 days.
Correct.
So you don't go to prison for 364 days. You just stay in the county jail usually for 364 days, which you probably can, I guess.
Well, you know, you are talking about, there you're talking
state.
About state.
Correct, right.
The feds only have prison. Federal prisons.
Okay, right. So perfect. So when we're talking the distinction between jail and prison, that's in state court. But let's jump in and start with federal prisons. So how does that prison system work in regards to the different types of prison that are in the federal system?
There are five broad categories: minimum, low, medium, high, and administrative. And when you talk about minimum, that's where most people think about these prison camps, where a lot of times people talk about club fed. They refer to them because they have tennis courts. There's a lot of them don't even have fences. It's like a dormitory, a sleeping facility. They pretty much have freedom of movement. That holds about 15% of all inmates in the federal system.
So who gets to go there?
Usually it's the people with low sentences. You got a year and a day, or you got 2 years. Usually it's nonviolent offenders, a lot of drug offenders, or white collar bankers, people who cooperate with the government. Those are the kind of people that go to that facility or a minimum facility.
So the less dangerous, the similar types of factors that are taken into account when you do your bond or your bail. You're not going to run. You're not going to have somebody come and try to break you out of prison. You have too much to lose, maybe, if you're going to break out of prison, meaning you had a 50-year sentence that they went down to 2 years because it wasn't that serious. But if you do something wrong in prison, you're going to end up staying for 50 years.
Well, frankly, at a camp, you don't have to break out of anything. You can just walk away from a camp, but nobody does because the reason they do, you walk away from a camp, You go back into the system, you will never make it back to a camp because you'll be considered a flight risk for the rest of your life in the prison system.
It's basically known as like a gift if you get to actually go to one of those camps.
Absolutely. I have clients, and those clients wouldn't do anything wrong. You get into a fight at a camp, in 15 minutes you're on a bus and you're off to another more secure facility because they don't want you at a camp if you're going to get into fights.
Right.
But then you've got the other spectrum.
It's basically like you, like we all wish the prison system would be.
Right.
Like really, that's the ideal prison system. Everybody gets along. Everybody's too scared to do anything wrong. And everybody just serves their time and moves on. And actually, they don't become, you know, somebody that's more of a threat to society. They don't regress in prison. They can actually progress. But unfortunately, that doesn't exist
Well, you've got a lot of people that think it's too easy, the camps.
Yeah,
they want them to
be
harsher.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That's why they call it club fed, and people used to complain about them.
That's true. Okay, I stand corrected. All right, so what other kinds? You said minimum, low, medium, high, and administrative. So that's the minimum.
That's the minimum. Now, the administrative are the federal facilities have holding facilities in a lot of towns or cities. In New York, there's a federal detention facility. That's pretrial. They've got one in Chicago. They used to have one in Miami till a hurricane came through and blew it down. So they have got facilities around that are mostly pretrial facilities, people waiting for trial. And because there's so many federal prisoners in that jurisdiction, it's cost effective for them to have their own facility rather than pay rent to a county jail for every federal inmate that's in that county jail.
So really an administrative facility is more like a jail.
Yes.
Okay. So administrative facilities are kind of like county jails. All right. Now let's talk about some of the differences between low, medium, and high security.
The really only difference between low and medium are freedom of movement is the key question. That's the phrase everybody uses.
And what does that mean, freedom of movement?
For instance, if you're in a medium and you go from building A to building B, a bell will ring. You'll have 7 minutes to get from building A to building B. You don't make it in 7 minutes. You're in violation. You go into some kind of a disciplinary function. So your movement is very controlled. Low, it's a little less controlled. There's maybe some fencing around, but not a wall. So it all depends on the level of security of the facility, the freedom of movement within a facility. But then when you get to the high, that's the penitentiaries. That's the stuff we all see with the gray walls. We would see in the movies where every bit of movement is controlled, that you can't even see the outside world. Those are high. But then there is one facility, the Supermax, which is in Florence, Colorado. And that's where the worst of the worst go. They are in a concrete box by themselves for 23 hours a day. The 1 hour they get out, they don't know when that's going to be because they have learned that people used to plan on when they'd have their 1 hour out. So now that 1 hour could be at midnight. That 1 hour could be at 8 o'clock in the morning. They come and they grab you. They say, okay, this is your 1 hour of exercise and to walk around the yard. Then they throw you back into your concrete block and you stay there for 23 hours.
And the yard, to be clear, is a fenced-in box.
Right.
Okay, so and with more distinctions, I guess. So when you talk about freedom of movement, some facilities, and explain to me the difference because I don't know whether this is in low, medium, high, or none of the above. Some facilities have, you know, workout areas, whether it's in the yard or somewhere else, basketball courts, libraries. You can actually go to college or go to law school or whatever while you're in prison. What types of facilities have those amenities, we'll call them?
Well, they're referred to as programs.
Okay.
And that you have a program like, for instance, like the gym you're talking about. Well, normally Lowe's, they have an outside workout area. It's you know, it's pretty easy to get to and work out. As you move up, they still have exercise, but it's more controlled. You may only have 15 minutes, and you may only have 15 minutes with certain people.
And my guess is you don't have metal bars and metal weights that you can throw at people.
Lows do.
Right, but not the high
security. The highs do not. And so it all depends on your level. Again, the freedom of movement. How much time do you have? You have a buzzer. You have 15 minutes to go work out, 15 minutes to get back. Those are all the things that control where you are. But if you're in, let's say, the minimum, the camps, pretty much you do your 8 hours of cooking or mopping, whatever your job is.
But besides the camps, do any of the other facilities allow you to go to the library and read or study or get your degree?
Yes, they all do. They all do, probably with the exception of the Supermax.
Okay. So you have those kind of opportunities while you're in the prison system to use the library, use the programs to do things right. Like that. And you can even make 7 cents a day working or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Except for being disciplined, you actually have a right to use a law library.
Oh, okay.
The Supreme Court has said that you should have access to a law library. You have the right to have access to it unless you're being disciplined for some reason.
And to answer your question, there is a company called Unicor, and they actually manage the federal prison work details. And what they'll do is there are prisons that make furniture. If you go to a courthouse, for example, the federal courthouse, all the furniture inside of the federal courthouse is made by the Unicor inmates. Right.
And they literally get paid like seven cents a day or something, and they can put that toward either their commissary account, or they can put it towards their court fines and costs and restitution that they owe the victim in their case. I remember reading about it when Michael Vick was in prison. They were talking about how he was making like $8 million per game or $1 million per pass attempt in prison, and then he was making 7 cents per day. Sorry, in the league, when he was playing in the NFL, he was making $1 million per pass. And then when he was in prison, he was making like 7 cents a day working a whole day.
When I was in the U.S. Attorney's office, for instance, my desk, my conference table, all the leather chairs were all made by the prison system. And if I wanted another piece of furniture, if there was an end table I wanted, I could put my order in with prisons, and the prisons would send me a desk or a table made by the prisoners.
What does the Bureau of Prisons do?
The Bureau of Prisons, they're the ones that manage all the prisons. They're the executive branch of government. And you've got to understand that prisons are ruled by the executive branch of government.
Not the judicial branch, which most people would think, the judges and the lawyers, things like that. So the executive branch is the president. That branch is actually who runs the Bureau of Prisons.
And in our country, we have a separation of powers. So when it's an executive function, the judicial branch can't mess with it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's interesting because if you go to court and you ask for certain programs for a defendant that's being sentenced in federal court, a lot of the judges will always say, I'll make the recommendation, but you know, I don't control the Bureau of Prisons, because in fact, the courts don't control the Bureau of Prisons.
And honestly, I'll tell you that 99% of the time when a judge recommends a facility, the Bureau of Prisons is not dumb. They realize they don't want to make judges mad. So if they can, they'll try to accommodate the judge and send the individual to where they go. Plus, and we'll get down to it, that also comes into play when the classification comes.
I think there was like an SVU episode or something where the judge was getting kickbacks to sending people to a private prison facility. So,
well, and there are private prison facilities in the state system. But in the federal system, the one neat thing about it is I think they're very, very good at actually working towards getting people to better themselves. The clients, at least George, I don't know in my experience, I don't know about you, the federal inmates always come back with something better than they had. They got an education. They did some trade program. They know how to become an air conditioning repairman. I don't know. I'm just making it up. They got their GED. But that's not always the case in the state system. So the feds are always been very good at being organized and really working on making people better.
It could be a function of who the federal prisoners are versus who the state prisoners are.
Okay, so in transitioning then to state prisons, let's talk about some of the differences and what the state prison system looks like versus the federal system.
Well, the state system, and people will be surprised to learn, Florida has 143 facilities that are run by the Department of Corrections, which is our state Bureau of Prisons. They do the same
thing. But that's not 143 prisons, right?
No, it's prisons, it's major prisons, female institutions, community release centers, work release centers, road prisons.
Okay, so all of those are included in the 143.
Correct.
Before we go forward, I think I want to highlight on what you said. Female prisons.
Yes.
There are actually distinct facilities just for females.
Yes. Okay. There are in Florida, and they make special accommodations, for instance, pregnant females, family situations. They're set up to handle those kinds of things.
Okay, so talk about some of the amenities or lack thereof in state prison.
Well, in state prison, you do not have the same quality of programs that you have in the federal system.
Why is that?
It's a matter of funding.
Money, yeah.
It's money. Federal system has a lot more money, and they have fewer inmates overall compared to the population than the state system does. And that's why the state system is trying to do whatever they can to get people released. They've reduced minimum mandatories. They've done all sorts of things to get people out of the prison system because they just don't have the facilities. Drug rehab. There's so much demand for drug rehab in the state prison system. They just don't have the facilities to handle all the people that need the drug rehab. Education. They just don't have the money to do all these college courses and all the things like the federal system does. So there is a difference. Without a doubt, when I have clients that have federal charges and state charges together, they always beg me, and I always tell them they're right, they beg me, have them serve their time in the federal system, not in the state system. So you have them sentenced first federally, then state, secondly, so that they'll go to the federal prison system.
Okay. So what are some of the things then that the state prison doesn't have that the federal prisons do?
Well, they all have it, but just not in the same quantity.
Okay.
They all have educational opportunity, but not as much educational opportunity.
Well, comfort and convenience are one of the issues that you'll see. I don't believe that there is a federal prison anywhere in the world that doesn't have, well, not anywhere in the country, I should say, that doesn't have, I don't know, air conditioning. But that's not true in Florida. I think, George, there are still prisons that don't have air conditioning.
State prisons. Some of
the, state prisons, yeah.
We still have a lot of, in Florida, we have, people don't realize this, a lot of prisons are operated privately, whereas a private company is contracted with the state to operate the prison. All of those are air conditioned. But the ones the state still owns, a lot of them aren't air conditioning. So you've got Florida.
How is that not abuse?
You know,
I don't understand.
I know. Again, it's funding. It's, you don't have the money. Think about when these prisons were built. Some of them.
Sure.
They're
okay.
Solid.
That's
concrete,
fine.
Poured concrete. They just don't have the money to retrofit those with, right, air conditioning vents.
If you go up to Citrus County, and hopefully you never have this opportunity, but one of the holding facilities for our local Middle District of Florida, our federal court, happens to be a local jail in Citrus County, and it is run by FCC. FCC is a private prison contractor. And every time, and it's funny how word gets around that I would have an inmate or that somebody that was in the you know, being held in Pinellas, be like, oh no, get me out of Pinellas, because Pinellas is obviously run by the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office. Get me up to Citrus. Get me pled out so I can go to FCC, because the food's better. The quality of just everything, apparently, is better up there.
So talk about that for a second. Talk about food quality. Talk about what they get to drink and eat. Is it just bread and water three times a day, or how does that work?
Well, believe it or not, they have salad bars. Most of the prison facilities really have a salad bar, and they're trying to make healthier meals. People used to talk about all they got was starch. You know, they throw a big thing of potatoes on there because starch is cheap. Big thing of rice. But now they have balanced diets. They have nutritionalists. The food is not great. I'm not saying I want to go there. Better than it was, and much healthier than it was.
Well, I was going to say, what's that movie with Robert Redford where he's the actual
warden? He becomes an inmate for a while.
That's right. And there are bugs crawling inside of his food.
Yeah. Okay.
And they accommodate, by the way, they accommodate religious preferences, too, when they're doing their food.
Interesting. So,
the kosher meal.
Or a Muslim meal.
Yeah.
And another interesting factoid about Florida state prisons is they actually still have Old Sparky, right?
The
so where do they
chair,
keep the electric chair?
It still sits at Rayford, which is where the most serious criminals go. And it's a three-legged chair, which is kind of funny. It was built in like 86. Hasn't been used since 99 because prisoners get a choice now of how they want to be executed. They can either have an injection. And the last one who went ahead and chose Sparky was a guy named Allen in 1999.
Why does the chair only have three legs?
That's the way they built it. There's really no explanation for it, but that's the way it was built by inmates, and it's got three legs.
Listen, I've seen the Green Mile. I don't know if a three-legged chair is a good idea.
All right, so transitioning from the prison buildings themselves and kind of talking about classification of prisoners and what life's like as somebody that, you know, wants to visit them, let's talk about the federal system there. So how does the federal system classify different types of inmates or prisoners, more serious, less serious? How does that process work?
Well, the federal system is very regimented on how they do their classification. First, when you're sentenced, the clerk sends your file to the Bureau of Prisons Classification Office. Then, unlike state court, in federal court, there's a pre-sentence report done on every single inmate. That pre-sentence report then goes to the classification officer. Classification officer then takes other factors. Like when we talked about the court recommendation for a facility, that's actually one of the factors when they're scoring you to see how serious a facility. They try to match the inmate's personal characteristics and crime to the facility's available programs. You're talking about programs. So the more serious an offender, the more serious the crime, the more violent the crime, then he will go to a more secure facility that's going to control his movement and not give him an opportunity to be violent. So the court recommendation, if he voluntarily surrendered, people don't realize this. That's why I've always recommended this. When a court lets an inmate voluntarily surrender, which means you get sentenced on day one, and the court says you can surrender yourself on day 60, that voluntary surrender status actually reduces your severity ranking to put you in a better prison. Obviously, the criminal history, how many prior criminal convictions have you had? How violent are you? Do you have any detainers? For instance, immigration detainers. Those immigration detainers can actually hold you up on what facility you go to. Your age, the younger you are, the higher your severity score. And then education level, drug and alcohol abuse, those kinds of things all come into play.
And then what will happen is when the Bureau of Prisons actually gets that documentation from the clerk's office, they then do their own classification internally, and that's when they look for like the weirdest things. For example, tattoos. When you do your pre-sentence report, the pre-sentence report officer will ask if you have any markings or tattoos. Right. The reason is not because they want to know that you've got the Greek flag tattooed on your left shoulder. The reason is if they want to know if you have any gang affiliations, because that dictates where they're going to put you. And I remember talking to a classifications officer one time in the Bureau of Prisons, because I had a guy from South America, and apparently he was just, I don't know, he was scared, he wasn't talking to them, and they weren't sure whether he was a norteño, meaning a northern Central American, or a sureño, and they didn't want to put him in the wrong pod, because of course that would be, you know, suicide.
Right.
For him.
Incites violence, right, exactly. Okay, so once they're actually sent over to a prison, is there anything that can change their designation?
Well, there are exceptions to the designation rule.
Okay.
Mental health, physical health, and public safety. For instance, you may score low, but you're a terrorist. You've been classified as a terrorist by the, you know, in your conviction. Well, I don't care how low you score, you're not going to a camp if you're a terrorist.
Right. And the opposite, I'm sorry, George, go ahead.
And the other is mental or physical health. You've got a serious health condition, they've got to send you to a facility, and there's only certain ones in the country that can take care of most. They've got huge hospitals in the prison system, and they will send you to a hospital prison in order to take care of your health problems.
And, you know, they actually reevaluate your classification on a regular basis. Regular basis, every so often. And the purpose is, as you progress through the prison term, your classification can change. So you may start at a high facility, but then over a course of time, and you've proven yourself to be doing good, you got your GED, they may take it from high to a medium, then from a medium to a low. And, you know, when you're kind of getting to the point about getting out, you may be in a camp, you know, for the last 6 months or a year.
Okay, so when they're classifying these prisoners as high, medium, low, do they do anything so that people know if you're coming to visit them, if you're their attorney? Did they classify them in some way so you know whether they're high, medium, or low? Or is that what they call it?
Well, the inmate knows, because they give the inmate a written breakdown of what is classified as and how he was classified.
Yeah,
that
there's
way.
A scoring system, actually.
So the inmate knows, and you have to obviously, if you're ever going to visit the inmate, you've got to know where he is in order to visit him. And by that, you'll also know where his classification lies.
Because they're not in the same building normally. Even though, for example, Coleman may have a camp and a low, you're not going to be in the same building.
And there's also situations where inmates are classified particularly violent. And if that happens, then even though they, again, we talked about this, may score a certain way, they're going to be restricted in where they go, because they have to go someplace that has a, for instance, 23 hours a day he's got to be watched.
Sure.
Sometimes that's referred to as a red dot. Yeah. Sometimes they're just referred to as administrative sanction.
So red dot means like a more violent
right
person.
Okay. Yeah, that's basically internal jargon for, you know, somebody really dangerous. The alternative also exists. You've got people that are considered trustees, which are people that are not that dangerous, that are not there for serious offenses, and they actually use them inside of the prison system as for couriers or to clean up. And
they don't use them. We were talking about this movie a while ago where the trustees actually were the guards. Remember, they actually had the guns and they were the guards.
Oh, Robert Redford movie.
The trustees do not have guns. They strictly do administrative work in the hospital, in the jail.
Like Tim Robbins in what's it called, where he did the books for the warden.
You're talking about Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
He was actually doing the books.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about visitation for a second in federal prisons. What is it like for a friend or a family member to try to visit someone in a federal prison?
Well, first they have to get approved. So they file the paperwork for approval.
Who files it, the friend or the inmate?
The friend and the inmate.
Okay.
They both have to ask for it. The prison will check you out, will approve you. You don't have any prior felony convictions. You didn't actually weren't a co-conspirator with this guy.
Sure.
So they'll approve it. Then you have to actually petition and get pre-approved for a visit when you want to go.
Well, are there certain things that disqualify you? Like if you've been convicted of a felony in the past, can you not visit someone at a prison?
That can disqualify
you. Okay, but it doesn't automatically.
Not automatically,
okay.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, I would think a co-conspirator would automatically...
Or if you have a conviction for violence...
But if it's like the person's son who's a convicted felon, they probably can still get in to visit their dad.
They would probably have to appeal the initial denial.
Exactly.
And have and the warden has a lot of discretion in this.
And the we haven't really talked about the warden. What does a warden do?
Well, the warden is obviously the head of the facility. They give the warden tremendous amount of discretion. The warden can extend visiting hours. The warden can approve passes for people that wouldn't normally come in. The warden has all sorts of discretion in how when you have a disciplinary problem, it's appealed to the warden.
Like furloughs, I think, go through the warden.
Yeah.
Right?
So the warden
has
tremendous.
Meaning when you can actually leave jail for, you know, for bereavement, if somebody's dying, they'll take you to wherever you're going, wherever they are.
All right. So anyway, sorry, I interrupted. So what else do you have to do to visit a friend or family member in there?
Well, then you have to get the approval. And then if you want to, you want to talk about the process when you actually arrive at the facility. You actually arrive at the facility. When you go in there, have an expectation you're going to be patted down. You're going to go through a metal detector. You may even get strip search. They allow you to do that if they have a particular founded suspicion. Then you go into the facility. You're not allowed to bring in things that, for instance, you can't bring a knife in, you know, the logic. You're also not allowed to dress inappropriately.
What is the dress code there?
Well, the dress code is for things like you can't wear halter tops. You can't wear short shorts.
Bathing suits. Spandex.
Yeah, nothing that reveals the, in a quote, natural curvature of the body.
Right. So you've got to, you know, let's face it, you just got to dress appropriately when you go in there, and you have to act appropriately as well, because you can be banned. You know, they say, okay, fine, you can't visit your husband. You know, you don't dress right.
What about conjugal visits? Do they still allow those?
Florida and the federal government do not allow conjugal visits.
Okay.
Some states do, but we don't.
Okay, so, and then is there a particular time? Are there only visiting hours during certain times of the day? How do you find that out?
In the federal system, you have a 4 hours a month visiting schedule. The state system is a little different. That's a little broader. The state system, you can actually be from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
But I think you have to make an appointment, if I'm not mistaken.
For both. Yes. And the state system, you know, you sit out there on picnic tables, and it's a kind of relaxed. They have a playground for the kids. They try to make it as relaxing as a prison can be.
What's interesting is if you go just a little bit north of here, there's a little town called Stowe. And Stowe is a prison town, basically, on the way between here and Jacksonville. And if you go to Stowe, you'll see the prison facility, and it's nothing but Motel 6s and, you know, Red Roofs Inn all around this place, because obviously people are going, coming from far away.
In Florida, there are counties whose economy totally depends on the prison system.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Stowe.
Yeah. Okay, so what if there's somebody, a family member or friend, and we have clients that kind of email us and talk to us about this, and friends, what do you do if you want to try to help them transfer from a maximum security to a lesser level, or from a bad prison to a better prison? What can you do as someone on the outside?
Well, there's actually three kinds of transfers. There's a transfer from a higher to a lower facility. There's also a transfer from a state to a federal facility. That happens sometimes. There's also a transfer from the United States to a prison in a foreign country. For instance, you have a Canadian citizen. He may want to transfer to Canada. So what you can do is, first off, the inmate has to petition for the transfer. And if you petition for the transfer, normally I tell my clients to wait at least 6 months to have a good record in the facility to show that you're really compliant with the rules. And then they might consider it. But transfers, they don't happen very often, and they don't happen very often upon prisoner request.
Unless it's a hardship.
It's an uphill battle.
It is, because the prison system already tries to put you close to your family.
Well, and there's already so many procedural things that happen before you get into prison, which we've done on other podcasts. If you listen to the trial podcast, if you listen to the sentencing podcast, if you listen to the plea bargain podcast that we've done, you can see all of the work and procedure that goes in before you actually show up to the prison that you're sentenced to.
And keep in mind, you said this before, a judge has nothing to do with it.
Right.
Filing a motion or going and talking to the judge has no effect on transferring.
Begging, right. Talking, you know, bringing character witnesses. All that stuff should have already happened, theoretically.
Right.
It doesn't always happen, you know, depending on the situation or the lawyer or whatever, but it should have already happened by the time they're serving their sentence in prison. How does prison discipline work? Who do you make complaints to? Can you sue the prison? Do people get arrested for abuse in prison?
When you talk about discipline, you're really talking about the inmate discipline.
Well, let's talk about both.
Okay. Because when an inmate does something wrong, then that inmate goes before a review. They're not allowed to subpoena witnesses. They're not allowed to have a lawyer. And
meaning they get accused of something inside the prison.
Right. So they go before this review board in the prison. The review board can determine, all right, you did the violation. Then they can either take away a privilege. They can put you in solitary confinement. They can give you take away your gain time. They can do all sorts of things in the prison system. You can appeal that to the warden and then appeal that one more time to the department. But normally that's as far as you go.
Can you add a criminal charge onto your sentence?
They can't, but a state attorney in the jurisdiction that.
So that's something additional that can happen. Let's say you kill somebody in the yard or something like that. They can add a murder charge and actually prosecute you again and then add another sentence on top.
Sure. I've represented clients where there was two guys in the cell one morning and the next morning they show up and one of them's dead.
Right.
So he was charged with murder. Unfortunately, the thing is, that guy will spend the rest of his life in solitary confinement because they're never going to put him in a cell with another inmate.
Right. So there is an outside avenue from just internally dealing with, you know, prison discipline if it rises to a level of a crime that they want to prosecute.
And that's the key. If it's a new law violation, it now goes back to the criminal system.
But even sometimes there's a law violation that they probably handle internally, I would think. Stealing, if they steal something within the prison or if they do something stupid like that, or are you just talking about
they're discretionary.
Most of it, they miss a curfew, or like you're saying, they don't get from one door to the next door in time. They can handle that discipline, obviously, internally. So what about if a prisoner in federal prison thinks that they've been abused by a guard or they're not getting proper medical treatment or, you know, the ceiling falls on their head and breaks their neck? You know, what remedies do they have for that if they're in the prison system?
There is a procedure. There is even a form they can fill out.
Grievance.
That's supposed to go to the warden for the warden to make a review. You can also file a lawsuit against the prison system.
Yeah, nothing precludes you from filing a lawsuit just like anybody else if a lawyer is willing to do it for you when you're in prison.
Right. And there's a lot of prisoners that file lawsuits themselves. They have access to the law library. They're in there
a
long
time. They're
not
very successful, but yeah.
They file it themselves. Sure. But normally you'll file a grievance on the form. It goes to the warden, and it's investigated. And then some decision is made as to whether or not your grievance is accepted or not.
All right. And so talking about state prisons, when we talk about how you get there, what it's like for the prisoners, what do they have to do when they get assigned to a prison? What are some of the differences in the federal system with the state system?
Well, the factors are slightly different in the state system. For instance, they actually have a demarcation with regards to age. 30 and over gets a lower classification than 30 and under. If you have a high school diploma, you get a better classification than someone who doesn't have a high school diploma. If you have full-time employment before you go into the prison system, you get points down in severity because you had full-time employment. So they look at some additional factors that I would say are more localized than the federal factors in determining classification.
What about the questionnaire that they have to fill out?
Well, that questionnaire, they...
Is that something that's different from the federal system?
Yes. The federal system doesn't have an initial questionnaire filled out by the inmate.
But the state system does.
Yeah. And the reason probably for that is because the inmate went through a pre-sentence investigation that asked all those questions about his background, his health.
So what's on the questionnaire in the state prison system?
It's more about background, it's health. Who'd you live with? What your employment was? Who's your mom? Who's your dad? Do you have any brothers and sisters? A lot of family information. And you can't find it because I've looked. It's not online. And I think it may be a document that the Bureau of Prisons classifies that you actually can't get your hands on before you go in. But I know from experience that's basically a background information.
Okay. And then when talking about in state prison, the visitation, is there anything different about the visitation rights or how you have to set up that process?
The setup is pretty much the same. Make an appointment, be pre-approved, all that. However, the amount of time you can visit in the state system is much larger than in the federal system. You can be there from 9 until 3 p.m.
There's one thing we didn't talk about, but a lot of people don't know this. You will lose track of your family members when they go to prison for about the first 30 days. And this is true in state and in federal because you go into the in-processing, the processing center. And that's the one where you get not only classified, but it's also where they do medical workups to make sure, you know, they know, you know, kind of what your medical condition is and just make sure that they... You know, can
and they don't have access to a phone like they normally would.
And that's kind of one of the reasons why the jails exist and why your sentence has to be more than 364 days for you to go to prison. Because if your sentence was only 2 months, it would take you 2 months to get processed into the prison system and processed out, right? So that's why you just stay in jail if you're only going to jail for 2 months. It's not worth it to transfer you and to process you into the into the prison system.
Right. Even the federal government, if you get a small sentence like that, technically you're going to go to, open quotes, prison, but they may kind of funnel you through to like a local halfway house or something.
And we also, I mean, I don't know why we glossed over this, but when we talked about that there's no federal jail, they do use county jails.
They use county jails by contract.
Right, exactly. Tampa, because I know we've had clients, federal clients that are in the county jail, and we have to visit them there. So the last thing I kind of want to talk about just really quickly, because some people might not care about this, is what is it like and what is the difference when an attorney goes and visits an inmate that's a client? You can talk federally, you can talk state, you can differentiate yourself, but what's kind of the difference versus when just a family member or friend?
The federal system is a little more formal than the state system for visitation. You actually have to have advance approval. You've got to send your paperwork in. You can even get a phone call from either state or federal if you set it up in advance, and your client can call you, and they call you on a secure line so no one's listening to the phone call. Because when you make phone calls from prison or county jail, everybody should know, it's being monitored. Someone's listening to that phone call, but not when you're talking to a lawyer. So you can set it up, and we have freer access. We don't have to go during visitation hours. We don't have to go only on weekends. We have much better access.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you telling me that every time we get a recorded phone call with our client basically saying stupid things, that he can actually hear where it says, this is a call from a detention facility?
All phone calls are being
recorded.
Right.
So, okay, so then talk about, because I know there's a pretty big difference. So it's also easier for us. We can come at different times. They have to let us see our client. They have to let us talk to our client. They have to let us leave certain things with our client to review. We're allowed to give things to our client without somebody else reviewing it first. You know, there are a lot of things that we can do. Like if you want to give your dad a letter in prison, they read it before the client reads it. If we send legal mail, they don't necessarily read it.
Well, and you should distinguish that. Legal mail is handled differently in the prison system, both prison systems. You write legal mail on the outside. You have to do all sorts of legal mumbo jumbo on the outside so they recognize it's legal mail, and they only open it in front of the inmate, and then they give it to the inmate to read. They don't read it.
And you can be disciplined if you write legal mail, all the mumbo jumbo, and it is not, in fact, legal mail. So they know lawyers are governed by the Florida bar. They're not going to do something like that.
I've had inmates get my mail that has been already opened, even though it said legal mail. And no one got disciplined for it.
No. You misunderstood what I said. I'm saying we as the lawyers would get disciplined if I'm sending Playboy magazines to the jail and I put legal mail on the front of the envelope. That's what I'm saying. And so that's why the reason the rules are like they are is because you assume lawyers, a profession of ethics, are going to follow the rules and only send legal mail.
I've had it say no to family members who've come to me and said, here, look, can you put this letter in your legal mail? And I said, no, I can't.
It's interesting because we've had phone calls over the years. I've had phone calls where the jail will call me and say, do you represent this person? No. Did you send him a letter on blank day?
Right.
No. What they'll do is people will get our envelopes, for example, and try to recycle them to use it as legal mail.
All right. So is there any difference in meeting with somebody that's charged with a more serious crime versus a less serious crime and how lawyers meet with them?
For the most part, as a lawyer, especially if you're somebody that the jail system or the prison system is used to, you can pretty much meet with your clients and there's a series of meeting rooms. Sometimes it's just easier. Will you go back up to the floor? Sure, I can go to the floor. But there are circumstances where there are some inmates where, for example, you're not meeting with Jeffrey Dahmer by yourself in a room. You're going to have special security. There's going to be some sort of, what do they call them, like a guard or somebody that's posted there while you're there.
And some prisons have like special meeting rooms that you have to go up to where it's just, there's only two chairs in there for you and your client.
Right, and they're both bolted down to the floor.
There's a guard standing right outside the door the whole time, things like that. So it can be different based on, kind of the situation or circumstances surrounding that client.
Yeah, actually Pinellas County Jail, if everybody's interested, has panic buttons on the walls of the meeting rooms. All right, so that pretty much wraps it up. So next time you go to prison, you'll know exactly what to do and what to look for.
Stop. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.